So Uber, for instance, on its own as an e-based business, is just its software system which work with individuals all over. So I know there are regulations with Uber, such as I've also been following the Uber business specifically in Cape Town. And I would like to have input on that, how you would like to regulate it with meters. As I cannot see that you can have private individual entrepreneurs metered with an E system like that. Thank you.
Honorable Vader.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. It has been partly covered already by some of the issues raised by the other honourable members, but just to mention a few things. First, I would like to say that, Honourable Chair, the more laws and rules that we make, the more these are made to be broken. So I'm saying this is because it is very important to ensure that there are systems in place to monitor, and I've already been covered by one of the honourable members who mentioned this already about monitoring and how are we going to actually go about monitoring this. We need to be very wary of placing a greater burden on our already stretched security resources in the country, meaning traffic departments and police and so forth. The other issue I want to raise is about the MECs, the minister, the MECs, the powers to set rates and fares in the industry. I'm just wondering how exactly is this going to be done. Is it going to be in a, I certainly hope it's not going to be in a dictatorial manner. If we could be what systems are going to be put in place to ensure will there be consultation and that kind of thing. The other one about the powers to conclude contracts, and I'd like a little bit more clarity on that. I think it was section, I think it's 11(1)(b)(7)(a), something about one of those. If we could get a little bit more about the powers and what this will exactly entail in the act. Then a few times in the presentation it came up that municipalities must have the capacity. If we could get some understanding as how what exactly do we mean? How are we going to decide whether a municipality has has the capacity to conclude certain contracts? The other issue, then, I'm trying to be brief in a long time, Honourable Chair, please bear with me, but there's a number of issues here. The other thing is cross-border operators. If we could get a little bit more, you know, Mpumalanga, we have two countries bordering with us, so this is important for us in Mpumalanga. So if we could get some more clarity on the cross-border operators and what is the position in that regard. The other issue is about tourism. You know, we're all climbing the tourism bandwagon, and I, as a rule, I don't like the term tourist. I prefer the term visitor. I'm a bit wary of deregulating the tourism transport. I think there needs to be more, you know, there needs to be regulation in this regard. Don't just let it become a free-for-all in the best interest of, or in the hope that we would be getting a lot of tourists coming into the country. I prefer that we concentrate on the visitors that we have coming into the country and the visitors that are crossing from one end of South Africa to the other on a daily basis. I think if we look after, you know, they say take care of the pennies, the pounds will take care of themselves. So if we take care of our local tourists and our local visitors all over this country, automatically we will be taking care of the visitors that come from outside this country. I fully agree with the honourable member that has mentioned already about the transport of goods in the country, the freight transport, and the fact that we should increase capacity, and we don't hear enough of this in the bill. But also, it's not only about increasing capacity of goods, or the correct term being freight, of course, but it is also about increasing the capacity of rail to transport passengers, to transport people. The best mode of transport has always been rail transport and will always be rail transport for many centuries to come. We need to look at that. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mother. Can we provide clarification to all the questions so that we can take the second round? I am not sure whether you are going to be sharing responsibilities or not.
Oh, we joined by the honourable member from the NCOP side, Makoshi Madikali. Mama, can you just indicate, introduce yourself to the attention of the presenters?
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. Good morning, Co-Chairperson from the National Assembly. My apology, I am from other meetings. My name is Masfako Dikhala from the Book.
Thank you, Makoshi. We can provide clarifications.
While they're sorting themselves out as to who starts, because I can see that the presentation is going to be coming from almost all of them, let me indicate that the MEC from Gauteng, much as the presentation was brought in late, we have since arranged, because we saw that it is very important, he will come and make presentation to the committee when we do public hearings, so that we don't lose track of the proposal that Gauteng has made, as despite the fact that it arrived late. We just felt that it is important that we don't derail or end up the bill having to come from the NCOP back to the NA. So it will be part of the people who will be coming to make presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to, I'll address the Transport Authority issue. I did indicate it was a substantive matter, and I did indicate we are not opposed to it, but it will require for us to run some consultations on the issue, and I think, I'm not too sure, but maybe when we, through the NCOP process, maybe those consultations could be undertaken. So, Chair, let's see if we can find solutions to certain obstructions at this point in time. So that's our view at this point. Thank you. The rest of my team will begin to address the various sections and questions that were raised earlier. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. The next question was on the validity period of operating licences. Under the Transition Act, it was a maximum of 5 years, but it was changed in the Principal Act to 7 years, so that's a maximum period. It can be issued for less, but not for more. There is one exception. If a contract in certain limited circumstances, a negotiated contract can be issued for up to 12 years, because it involves big investments in buses and infrastructure and so on. In that case, the operator is entitled to an operating license in line with the contract, but otherwise it's 7 years. So the next question was on the new contracting arrangements with provinces, that a province can contract in, for example, where a municipality lacks the capacity, or the what's happening in practice, Chair, in some municipalities, there is a need for subsidized bus transport, for example, but the municipality is not doing it for whatever reason. In that case, the question is, how does this tie up with the Constitution, Section 139, where if a municipality is not undertaking its functions, the province can step in. What is envisaged, Chair, is that the minister will monitor the situation. There is engagement between the provinces and the municipalities on this issue, and in some provinces, provinces are doing it on behalf of the municipalities by agreement. That is allowed under the Constitution. So this is not really a Big Brother situation. It's really... I mean, if it does happen that a municipality or a province is just not doing its job, then the national government or province can step in under the constitution. But this is just to try and see that the contracting scene is covered. One of the philosophies in the Principal Act, which came from the National Public Transport Strategy and Action Plan of 2007, was that functions should be consolidated at the municipal level where possible. One of the honourable members mentioned fragmentation. So the Act does try to avoid this fragmentation, but there has to be some situation in place where the function is not happening, that the minister can intervene and the province then has powers to contract. The next question is on the working conditions for drivers of taxis. There is a sectoral determination under the Labour Relations Act. Now, what the Principal Act says at present, it says an operator must sign a declaration to say that he or she will comply with labour laws. Now, we had one comment here, and you'll probably hear it in the presentations tomorrow, from Mr. Paul Browning. He's an ex-member of the NPTR. And he said that drivers are not being well treated in practice. Operators are not complying with that statement that they signed. And his suggestion was that we should amend Section 79 to say that an operating license can be withdrawn or suspended where they're not complying with labour relations. We're a bit concerned about this at the department, Chair, and the reason is, I think, the DIT is not able to police the Labour Relations Act, and I think that function should be left to the Labour Inspectors. But one can consider possibly putting in a provision like that. So the next question was on scholars. Firstly, let's deal with the bokkies. This is a huge problem. Bokkies are unsafe, and it is regulated, but under the National Road Traffic Act and the National Road Traffic Regulations. What those regulations say is that a goods vehicle may not be used to transport passengers for reward. That's the one thing. And then it says that passengers may not be transported on the back of bokkies unless the bokkie is built up to a certain level and so on. I think, Chair, this is more a law enforcement issue. It is covered in the legislation. At the moment, there are regulations under the Principal Act dealing with scholar transport or learner transport. And what it says is that where an operator is loading passengers in front of a school or a college, a proper loading space must be provided off of the public road because it's dangerous when children get off the bus and run across the road. So there are regulations in place on that, but I think it is more a law enforcement issue.
The next question was on the issue with regard to consultation, as to when was consultation done. The bill was first published for public comment in 2013, but before that we published the bill. We had a national workshop where we invited all stakeholders to present and to have their comments verbally. Then from there we published the bill in a government cabinet to invite comments from stakeholders. Then the consultation started from there in 2013 up until now. So some of the stakeholders we met in 2014 leading us to 2015, and we had one-on-one with various stakeholders depending on the request from the stakeholders, like Santaco, Saboa. But in brief, the consultation started in 2013. The other question was whether the companies, the bus companies and passengers were consulted during that consultation process. Yes, of course, we did consult the passengers and also the bus companies. because most of the bus companies are members of SABOA, and also the taxi operators are members of SANTACO. So we had a consultation with SANTACO and SABOA, and also we also received comments from local taxi associations, and also regional taxi associations, and also provincial, including national taxi association. So all passengers also were some of the individual passengers also submit the comments to us, and we also had a meeting with them. The issue of revising the contracting arrangement.
The question here
was with regard to when was the contract concluded. So what is happening is that in terms of the current Principal Act, the Principal Act is saying the old order contract, the responsibility to enter within the old order contract rests with the provinces. And in terms of the new contract, it empowers the municipality to enter into new contracts. Hence, now in the Amendment Act, we are also empowering the provinces to enter into a contract where the municipality doesn't meet the criteria that will be provided by regulation by the Minister of Transport in consultation with COCTA. Then when the province fails to enter into a contract, then the Minister or National Department will deal with that contract. So if maybe the contract that was entered in terms of the NADTA will be replaced by the new contract that will be entered in terms of the current bill. So meaning that because the Act, Principal Act, is saying no, those old order contracts will be assigned, but now in the amendment bill we're saying no, they will be replaced by the new contract that will be entered by the municipality.
So the next question was on operators, for example, winning tenders, or some service provider winning tenders and then not doing the job. That is regulated by the PFMA at national and provincial level and by the MFMA at municipal level, and they both, there's the Treasury regulations. There's also the Preferential Policy Framework Act of 2000. So it's not really an issue that needs to be regulated by this legislation, but coming back to the question that came up on monitoring, the idea is that the NPTR at national level and the PREs at provincial level will monitor, that means be aware of what's going on with contracts and so on. Then the question also came up, what can they do? The Act does provide for issuing directives. If the recipient of the directive doesn't comply, one has to go through political channels or there are mechanisms. But we do have a constitutional problem here, Chair. If a function is allocated, for example, to a municipality by the Constitution, then it's difficult for another sphere to intervene except through the channels like Section 139 and so on. But I think the monitoring function is more to know what's going on, to cajole, to request, to send directives and so on. That was the easy stuff so far. Why are taxis not subsidized? At the moment, as we know, there are substantial subsidies being paid for rail, that's both Gautrain and Praza, and for the bus industry through the bus contracts. These are the golden arrows, the putcos and so on. Chair, as my colleague, Advocate Ndandaleni, said, the idea is to involve the taxis into the bus contracts, for example, as feeder services. The question also came up, why is My City Services running on taxi routes? The city has entered into intensive negotiations with taxi operators. In some cases, taxi operators have been involved as shareholders of the new bus companies. This is being done in Johannesburg and Tshwane as well, Chair. in some cases compensation has been paid and then the operator agrees to surrender his or her license and to stop operating. So these efforts are made. There's also the taxi recapitalization project here, which is, has just been subject to review by the department, and there have been suggestions how to extend it and so on. The Santaco and the MTA, the industry, they're very much in favor of recap. So that is one method of subsidization, but see, this is a headache. I don't know if my colleagues could add. Okay. There is, of course, the opportunity for various types of indirect subsidies, but I would say, Chair, this, the department is well aware of this issue and is looking into it.
The issue with regard to scholar transport, and to suggest that why don't we amend the Act and empower only the Department of Transport to enter into contract with the operators. So currently, in terms of the scholar lineup policy that has been approved by Cabinet last year, that policy empowers both the Department of Education and the Department of Transport in the provinces to enter into that contract. But the question might be, can we, as national, in the national land transport, can we contradict that policy, because the policy allocates that function to two government departments based on the consultation that they had when they were developing that a policy with various stakeholders, including the provincial department. Now, in the Act, in the amendment bill, we just provide that function to say that the government will enter into those type of contract, but we are not specific as to whether we allocate that function to which department. So maybe that we can also have to consult the relevant section in the department that deals with scholar transport and see if it's possible or to be specific in the amendment bill and allocate that function to the provincial Department of Transport instead of giving it to different departments. But like I indicated, that is in the policy that has been approved by Cabinet.
If I could just come in, there is also a constitutional issue here, Chair. The Constitution allocates to the Premier of the province the power to structure departments within the province. And we know provinces have transport departments and education departments, but that is up to the Premier and the Executive Committee to decide. But as my colleague said, I think the department would like to see that function coming under the transport department. Chair, coming back to subsidies, Mr. Portela just pointed out that subsidies are dealt with through the Division of Revenue Act, because every year in the DORA there is a conditional grant made both to the provinces. It's called the PTOG, the Public Transport Operations Grant. That is to fund the bus contracts, and now there's a new grant called the PTNG, Public Transport Network Grant, which goes to the municipalities, and that is to fund the integrated rapid transport networks and so on. So it's also very much a case of subsidies coming through those conditional grants. The departments of transport are lobbying every year for more funds, because as we know, the population grows, there are new settlements. We need to expand the services, but the grants they are increased for inflation and so on, but they tend not to keep pace with the aspirations of subsidies. Just to mention the Gautrain, I read a very interesting article the other day. Yes, it is heavily subsidized, but there are an incredible number of externalities from that service. It keeps hundreds of or thousands of cars off the road. It reduces traffic. It lets people, I think of myself, instead of spending 2 hours in the car to Johannesburg, I can spend half an hour and be in Sandton. So there are those external benefits, but I just wanted to mention that as well. There was a question on the Structures Act and the functions between district and local municipalities. So just to give more clarity, Section 84 of the Structures Act provides that a list of functions that must be undertaken by district municipalities, and then the balance is all done with by local municipalities. And one of the things it mentions is public passenger transport as a district function. But that's not in line with the minimum requirements for integrated transport plans, which provides various issues in that. So that amendment is just to make that provision in the Structures Act subject to the NLTA and the NLTA regulations and those minimum requirements, because those interactions are quite complicated between those two types of municipalities.
Thank you. Just to add, Chair, as well, or to what Neville was just saying, most of the functions of the municipalities in terms of planning and other public transport provision, they are extensively clarified in the minimum requirements on the integrated transport plan, including the issue of freight as well, freight considerations. Also, what I wanted to bring in up to address that question of the PLTF, why we cancelled the 2 year to say that it was too onerous. Definitely that was the feeling that we got from the provinces, that the 2 years is too soon for them to review the PLTF. So what we did, we said they can review it after every 5 years rather than the 2 year cycle. Thank you, Chair.
So then it was a question of the service level agreements between PRASA and the municipality. The Section 50 in the Intermodal Planning Committee, the Act's being amended to make it clear that is a committee of officials, which includes PRASA and so on, at municipal level. And in Section 16, the Land Transport Advisory Board, that's where the private sector comes in, the bus operators and the taxis and so on. Chair, we've heard the comment that why are we just referring to PRASA? The idea is not just to have PRASA. If there's any other rail provider that could be subsidized or could be contracted to provide services, that should be included. Chair, I think we will take another look at that and make sure that we're not being too restrictive there. Then the question of what policy are we working on? The basic policy is still the national, the white paper on national transport policy of 1996. The department is busy reviewing that at the moment. One of the big drivers of this principal act was the Public Transport Strategy and Action Plan of 2007, which was quite a revolutionary document. And of course there are other policies. The department has a non-motorized transport policy that it's working on, and there are various, there's a national freight logistics policy and so on. So there is a whole range of policy documents that are applicable, and of course there is the Green Paper on National Rail Policy, which was published for comment a couple of years ago and which will hopefully result in the white paper. So when the Principal Act was passed, it was acknowledged that rail is not being addressed very much, except in the planning context. So the idea is that once the rail white paper is finalized, there will be a National Rail Act, whatever that will provide. Yeah, there's a question about the moratorium. What the amendment bill is providing is, see, there is no power in this act to withdraw permits or operating licenses. That was debated at length in this committee when the principal act went through. But what the Act does say is that municipalities must do ITPs, integrated transport plans. When someone applies for a new license or renewal of a license, the application must be referred to the planning authority. It must look at its plan. And if it sees that there is an overabundance, or what's the word, too many surplus of services on a route, it can even then direct the regulatory entity to refuse the application. So in a sense, that will be a moratorium on that route, but the idea is that the planning authority must continually revise and update its ITP, and if there are new settlements and so on, it must advise the regulatory entity to issue new licenses for that new settlement and so on. So the Act does not provide for a moratorium as such, except in that indirect sense. So the next question was on codes of conduct. These are not new things. In terms of provincial legislation and even in terms of the Transition Act, most of the provinces published codes of conduct when the registrars were still in place. So there were codes of conduct for associations and for operators and for drivers. Now, what is envisaged, Judge, is codes of conduct for operators and for drivers. And if the operator then habitually does not comply with the code of conduct, for example, there was a bus company at one stage whose buses were continually involved in accidents and were not roadworthy and so on, then there is provision for action to be taken, and in an extreme case, the operating license can be withdrawn. There was a question raised about PATCO. Now, if we take a bus company that's being subsidized and they suddenly decide to stop providing services, there is a contract in place between the province and that bus company. In the case of PATCO, it's Gauteng. In the case of Golden Arrow, Western Cape. And, of course, the cities are taking over parts of those services and contracting them in a piecemeal manner. And that contract, those contracts, there are model contract documents that have been published in the Gazette, and they provide for strict penalties. So if a tip is not provided, for example, there's a penalty that is implied, and that is taken off the subsidy for that month. So that is dealt with in a contractual sense. But of course, if the operator is flouting other laws, there is provision in Section 79 as well to withdraw or suspend the operating license. To the e-hailing question, are they operating legally? In terms of the Act at present, they must have an operating license and they fall into the category of charter service at the moment. If they don't have an operating license, they're illegal. We understand that, or we're told that they all do comply. Now, and then the question came up, how are we going to regulate them? Now, the idea is, you see, if we take the Uber app, for example, what it does is it tells you the fare up front. It gives you a photo of the driver and the registration number. So that means that you won't get hijacked as long as you check that it is the right car coming along with the right driver. And it's got various methods built in to protect the passenger. Now, there are new companies coming up, as Mr. Patel said, and the department would also like them to comply with all the requirements that will protect the passenger. And the minister will then develop a set of regulations which will provide, for example, you must identify the driver, you must tell the passenger up front what the fare is and so on. We've got some very good examples. For example, the City of New York has got very comprehensive regulations for e-hailing, and those will be taken into account. There'll be consultation with all the operators. The metered taxis, there will be consultation with them as well. The question of how does cross-border work? Now, cross-border is regulated in terms of agreements that South Africa has with our neighbouring countries. There's, for example, the SADC protocol, which is between all the SADC countries. There is the memorandum of understanding between Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, Namibia and South Africa. And then there's some bilateral agreements that we have. And those agreements are applied through the Cross-Border Road Transport Act. Now, how the system works basically is if an operator is going, let's say, from Mpumalanga to Mozambique, he or she must apply to the cross-border agency in Pretoria. We've actually had a comment here that that's a problem because there's only one office. But that if the operator is South African-based, they apply there, they get a permit which allows them to go into the other country, but they have to comply with the agreement. Some of the agreements have quotas, so they say if South Africa has 20 operators, then Mozambique can only have 20 or something to that effect. Now, the Act says, the Cross-Border Act says that where the passenger crosses the border or intends to cross the border, that is cross-border transport. So if the operator loads off passengers at the border, like in Ficksburg, they walk across into Maseru, that is cross-border transport, even though they are offloaded there. Now, there is a provision in the Principal Act saying that where they dropped within 2 kilometres of the border, that is deemed to be cross-border transport. So that operator must have a cross-border permit. You can have both. You can have a local operating licence and a cross-border permit. So if the operator, let's say, starts in Cape Town, loads passengers along the route and ends up in Swaziland or somewhere, that operator must have an operating licence as well as a cross-border permit. I don't know if I've explained that adequately, Chair, but as Mr. Patel said, the feeling was that provision should rather be in the Cross-Border Act, so it's being repealed here, and the cross-border is, we presume, busy with including it in their next amendments.
On the question regarding the NPTR and the other two additional functions that is being allocated to the NPTR. Yeah, it is correct that the NPTR started operating this year in terms of the gazette that was published this year to deal with the tourist services operating license. But the intention is to have another function performed by the NPTR regarding the interprovincial, if maybe operator wants to operate from one province to another province, so the NPTR will deal with that function. So the intention is to have that function performed by NPTR by next year, and the additional two functions that are being allocated to the NPTR, which include the updating of that information to operators that are operating from one province to another, and also the function with regard to the issuing directive to the PRE and MRE in the province and municipality if they're not performing their function properly. So the idea is to have the NPTR having that function by or the function by next year.
Are you done?
A couple more questions. Say the question of freight. Section 37 of the Act deals with freight, and it requires the minister to do a national policy. So the policy is to get freight off of the road and onto rail in appropriate cases, but it's not as easy as it sounds. There are a number of issues. For example, someone mentioned the other day they get a phone call from somewhere in the east that people need a big load of grain, but they need it by next Tuesday. And then no matter how efficient your rail system is, the only way you can get it there is by road. But this question, hopefully, Chair, will be sorted out in the National Rail Policy when that white paper comes out. And I don't think it's an issue for the bill at present. If we had the answer, we'd put it in. Chair, there was one more question from Honourable Member on financial consequences of Section 47. Not sure if we understood the question, that's conversion of permits. Chair, it was Honourable Member De Freitas. I'm not sure what the concern there is.
Honourable De Freitas, if you can rephrase your question, but I know that there are other questions which have not been responded to, especially some questions which were asked by Honourable Rama Plakana. I remember one of the questions being oversight by provinces, oversight on what, those kind of things. Honourable De Freitas, if you can rephrase your question so that they can be able to respond to all the questions at once.
Well, really just unfunded mandates and the impact it has on the city as a government. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, this it goes together with capacity and so on. This is an issue that was debated when the Principal Act went through. What about unfunded mandates? I don't know what the answer is, Chair, just to... apart from, I don't think one could address it really in this act or in this bill, but one must keep it in mind at all times that one must not allocate functions that cannot be carried out. I think that will be kept in mind. See, there was also a question on setting of fares. Should fares be set or not? Now, when services are subsidized and there's a contract out, then the fares are set in the contract. So the operator has to tender for that contract or negotiate on the basis that the fares will be X. And if the fares are kept low, obviously the subsidies will be higher because to cover the costs and, of the operator and so on. We cannot regulate fares for commercial services too, because that would be anti-competitive. There's a Competition Act and there's a Constitution as well. It's interesting in some countries like Swaziland, I know, and in Tanzania, the government does set fares. They actually publish a gazette every year and they say if you're a bus you can only charge 10 rand or whatever it is, or if you're a taxi. And I was in Tanzania the other day, the operators are bitterly upset about this too. They say they can't meet their costs. But it's not policy in South Africa to set fares because it's anti-competitive. Chair. Yes, Chair, there was a question on tourism versus visitors. The tourist transport services are defined as services where tourists are taken from one destination to another. For example, let's say a business person lands in Cape Town and he or she is at a loose end for the day, wants to take a tour to the winelands, then finds a tourist operator, then that's tourist transport. Where it's a vehicle carrying more than 10 passengers, there must be a properly qualified tour guide on board the vehicle. If it's less than 10, then the driver can be the tour guide. That is regulated under the Tourism Act. So it is felt that there is a different branch of necessary or different mode of tourism transport which falls under a different system of accreditation. Now, we had one comment, Chair, we saw that where the Meter Taxi Forum said they should also have an accreditation system. And when the Principal Act went through, the idea was to see how it works for tourist transport. If it works well, maybe consider amending the Act to then extend it to other types of services. But that cannot be done at this stage.
The concern raised by me, the honourable member there, regarding the issue with regard to my city, to say that my city is taking the roads that belong to ordinary taxi association. The idea behind my city and the negotiated contract is to deal with the issue that is raised regarding the monopoly, and also to deal with the issue of taxi empowerment, and also to integrate the service, because what happens is if the city negotiate with the operators that are operating in that route, which includes the taxi operator, then what needs to happen is that the city must establish or form a company and include those operators that are operating there in that route, in that company, depending on the market share that the operator will be given based on the particulars that they were granted by the PREs in order for them to operate in that route, like here in Western Cape, where the city of Cape Town also formed the My City on behalf of those operators that are operating that route. The idea and the intention is to address the issue that is raised regarding the monopoly, because we also want to empower those taxi operators that are operating there, and then the period will be for a period of 12 years, and after that then we'll go out on tender.
Honourable members, have all questions been responded to? Honourable Humsina, Honourable Ramatakan, we will have to break at 1 o'clock to allow honourable members from the National Council to go and do the duty, their calling, the national calling, which is they will be going into their plenary session in the NCOP. Honourable Humsinga.
Thank you, Chair. We focused on, with questions on, in particular, what was presented on, but I find several aspects in the principle bill quite disturbing. If I could just mention one in particular, section 35, which starts off from subsection 4, and then more specifically around the separation of powers, where it suggested that some sort of municipal land transport fund under the municipality then needs to be formed, but then in contrast to what we have learned around the separation of powers, these projects can be prescribed by the minister, which I can't understand. In terms of separation of powers, you've got local government, and in a different sphere you've got provincial and national government, so that surely is things that we should look at. Subsection 5 or subsection 7 then also alludes to the municipal manager and chief executive officer must then, as some sort of obligation, provide plans of projects annually, not just to council but also to the transport authority. So it could be argued that this intended new formation in the form of this transport authority should then, before you go to council to seek approval, have insight and give their approval. So it's not quite clear, you know, how these delegation of powers and separation of different authorities, how the interplay should be, whether what's suggested in, for instance, subsection 7, where you need council approval, is that prior to getting approval from this transport authority, or is it the other way around? And then also in particular how funding and budgeting then in sort of works its way into all of this. It's not quite clear. So My take on this is, Chair, that apart from what is being presented, there are a lot of instances in a lot of these sections that clearly needs more thought and thinking in terms of the design and what's been presented here. So I would suggest that it needs to go back to the drawing board in a serious way. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Ramachakana.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm going to be brief and just raise one issue. You see, the with respect to the gentleman that responded to the questions I asked, it's there is a difference between the hopeful situation and the real situation. You're talking about the response in particular when you speak about my city or any other for that matter. And I've asked a question in the Act, where do you have which provision specifically speaks about minibus taxi or any of this feeder system or even the idea about the empowerment, where you can say, let me make an example. You know about the George situation. You've read about it. When the taxis and the buses, the Go George was in conflict, I went there. The issue has not been that it's a negotiation. The issue is that you were giving you 350,000 for your license. You give us that license, we take over the route. That's George Tembele to route. And operator is saying, no, we can't give you, you can't give us 350,000 rand for a per license that I hold, and then you take my library away from it. And then the municipality said, if you don't want it, we would put the buses there and depose you from the road. From the route. So I'm asking, why is the provision in the Act that you're talking about that is going to be of a fair balancing protective provision? In Sea Point, all the taxis that operate Sea Point or Kemps Bay, same thing happened. They said, we're giving you 500,000 for your license for life. You don't go to operate here now. This is the city that's taking over. It is not saying we integrate you as a feeder system because there is no provision that says that in the Act. So what I'm suggesting, what I'm asking is the theoretical position from where you're coming from. We had a long discussion with the department, the Director General, about this issue. And we were told it's going to be addressed in this Act, this issue. And I asked, where is the envelope provision that says 30% of this is going to be a part of the integrating this other minibus taxi operating in that particular route? It doesn't exist. Unless you tell me where it is in this, I don't see it. So if you're saying they must do it, because they know their plans, they have their plans, their integrated plans, and if that provision is not empowering this, the poor small business sector, we are killing it off. It is busy being killed off now, bit by bit, because there is no provision, legal provision to protect it. Then you're going to have a conflict that you have seen it. Now, sir, please, I understand the gentleman that was answering there. I understand the situation that I'm speaking about because we are dealing with on a daily basis this particular question. So if you give me a general explanation, you're not answering the question. It's not simply answering this particular question. So if we don't have that provision, say we don't have the provision, then we must say, we will sponsor a provision. We will say in the provision 30% of integration is going to be reserved or 40%. As you integrate this public transport and you bring in this, efficiency, it must make provision for the minibus taxi. Then we sponsor that particular provision if you don't have it. You haven't thought about, that's why I was asking the policy. Which policy is informing you about the amendment? Because I understand the 1996 white paper, what it wanted to achieve. So that's all really the question, and that question has not been sufficiently dealt with, but I will leave it just to say this is my comment. You have to go back and think about it and point me to the same provision in the Act. I've been trying to read it as we're talking. I don't see it doesn't exist. Government today is putting, you have a set aside. Set aside, where is an envelope system in terms of the empowerment aspect. I'm saying that provision, I don't see it in this Act. Maybe I was trying to page too quickly. Please help me to see it where it is in this Act, where you specifically set that out. Because if you don't do that, you're not protecting this this public transport, this minibus taxi. You're actually killing it off. This is really what is happening on the ground. That's just the statement I want to leave you with. You don't have to answer it now. You can send a note saying this is a provision, and then we will deal with it. But I'm not happy with the responses. The hope, it was a hope that it will achieve this. We told the minister it's not achieving it. We told the DG it's not dealing with it. Then they said the director of the department are going to bring this provision. But you're not bringing that provision.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm just concerned about one little issue. The issue of the contracts that are made with operators, in which it stipulates that the operator is subject to the labor law. Now, I'm wondering whether, you know, and to me, any employer is subject to the labor law in this country. Why should it still be part of a contract? I'm concerned that if it is in one contract and does not exist in another contract, then aren't we compromising ourselves in some way, in the sense that the second contractor could say, well, it doesn't appear in my contract. So I'm asking why is this necessary, or should it even be there? Because in my opinion, every employer is subject to the labor law of the country. And the second thing I want to say is about, on a lighter note, the cross-border office that is in Pretoria. I'm just wondering whether it shouldn't move to Mbombela.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to request the department to quickly go through the questions that have been asked, and we'll take it from there.
Thanks, Chair. On the question of the roles of the spheres and the planning, and there was specific reference to Section 35(4). What that section says, Chair, is that each province must do a provincial land transport framework. Now, the way it works, Chair, and I'm sure my colleague Moody can come in on this as well, the minister, in terms of Section 33, I think, must prepare an LLTSF, National Land Transport Strategic Framework. That's a very overarching strategic framework which says things, for example, that all new infrastructure must make provision for non-motorized transport and things like that. Then the provincial MEC does the Provincial Land Transport Framework, which is also a framework which sets policy for the province in line with national policy, sets goals and objectives. Then the municipalities do their ITPs, their integrated transport plans. When they finish, they submit it to the province. The MEC checks certain things, for example, have they followed the correct procedures and what have you, and then those ITPs are incorporated into the PLTPF. And a good example is the Gauteng 20-year integration master plan, where it pulls together the ITPs of the municipality. So that's the way it's supposed to work. I think if there are any specific suggestions as to how that could be improved, and of course there are published minimum requirements for PLTFs in the Gazette and also for ITPs. The ITP one has just been done, I think, in July. They were revised.
Thank you.
Then on this question of contracting, the specific section in the Act at the moment is section 41(2), where it says that in certain circumstances where a municipality or where a contracting authority is integrated in an area doing transformations and so on, it can enter into negotiated contracts, for example, to empower small business like taxis. And then subsection 2 says, in the process, the contracting authority must negotiate with all existing operators, including taxis, that's unscheduled services. So there has to be negotiations. Also, what is missing from the Act deliberately is that operating licenses cannot be withdrawn. So if a municipality, for example, wants to put in a My City service, and there are taxis on that route with licenses, they can carry on operating. They maintain their licenses. Can only be withdrawn by agreement. So if, as my colleague said, if the operator agrees to become a shareholder of the bus company, for example, he or she can then agree to surrender their license. As regards free competition, I mean, it's open to anybody if they can get a license to enter the route and compete. We do, of course, have the problem with bus monopolies that has to be addressed. Thanks. Yes, Ted, I forgot to mention Section 42 is supported by regulations. They're called the Regulations on Contracting for Public Transport Services, and they were published in 2009. And they give flesh to how the negotiating process must work and so on. And you'll see that in the amendment bill, we're giving the minister more detailed powers to make those regulations. On how the those regulations at the moment say you actually have to make an offer to the existing operators if they don't want to negotiate or if negotiations break down. You can make them a final offer. If they don't respond or they don't reject it, then you can carry on.
You would want to respond to Honourable Ramatlakana's lengthy chat on integration?
The taxi operator is being phased out.
No, I think that question, I think, is you can park it for further discussion, because we can't make law by regulation. If the Principal Act does not have the provision that empowers, you can't give the minister the power that doesn't exist in the Act. Because then you open up the minister for legal cases. That doesn't. So I'm saying, Chair, let's park these some of these issues. We would have more time to engage with it. Because the theoretical answer I'm getting is far removed from the reality. I don't hear this free competition, what it means by free competition, frankly. And I'm saying there is an upfront commitment of government in power, small business. What free competition is monopoly of buses have? There's no free competition, it's a monopoly. So we've got to break it down, we've got to empower the Act to be able to assist you to get to that road. Right now the government has not been able to do anything in the last 22 years in that area, because of the rights that they say inherently, it was a God-given right for them to operate that business. But now we need to change it. I'm saying, if you don't have a provision, don't try and give me anything that does not answer anything, because it's not going to help us in the situation we're confronting is today. So let's go back and say, we don't have that provision. Let's suggest a better provision in this process that empowers, even if it's 30% of that particular market at an integrated feeder system. You've got to say it right up front. Then the minister can come with the regulations about how this has to happen.
But I'm ready to leave it because I'm not going to get the answer. I think we probably, well, it shows that the DG is not here, the acting DG is not here, the communication between us and them is lost. Because this issue that we've raised as a concern is not being addressed by the delegation that is here, because they're not here. So we will probably have to shelve it until they come as well, so that we can engage with them directly about these issues.
Thank you very much, Honorable. I think it's very clear, but at the center is how are we going to make sure that this is a deficiency within the framework of this act that we are trying to amend. And therefore, obviously, maybe empower members, but I know that when the NCOP goes to go and do provincial public hearings, these are some of the things that are going to come out to say, how do you deal with this? And it can't be possible that you say the regulations will deal with something which actually within the framework of the law doesn't find its place, because it needs to find space somewhere within the law, so that when it gets regulated, then there's a fallback position, because legally this is what is happening. The regulations are saying this, but we will give it to you. We're starting the processes within the National Assembly of the public hearings, and definitely these are some of the things that are going to be coming out as proposals to us in front. Honourable members, do we still have other issues that we believe we can be able to tease? But I need to say to all of us as honourable members that when you can clearly see that the DG, the acting DG, who's also the incumbent in the portfolio of public transport, is not here, and that is why we're finding it very difficult to can really get what our anticipations are. Honourable Defector, you had something to talk to before probably maybe we think of closing.
Chair, with your indulgence, I was going to ask if we could just chat for 5 minutes, just the committee members, if you don't mind, if possible. Thank you.
Okay. We will definitely do that. On that note, I think you've had the questions, you've had the submissions that have been made by members, and definitely we would like to also thank you for availing yourself so that we can be able to have engagement, and we believe that tomorrow, as we'll be starting with the public hearings from the National Assembly, you will give yourself an opportunity, because excitedly so is that there's a whole lot of people, organizations and institutions that have shown keen interest making submissions to when this bill was publicized in Parliament. And we have also tried to have as many people as is possible that will come and make come to the public hearings to make presentations. Let me close from my side and give it to my co-chairperson from the NCOP. Thank you very much for everybody who has been here. And we believe that this is just but work in progress that we have started. It's the beginning of the thousands or millions steps that we are going to be taking into making sure that the bill, as we will be taking it forward, will address the issues of the basic needs. The bill, as we will be moving as a Section 76 bill, will assist us in growing the economy. It will also assist us in making sure that we develop the human resource, because not only are we looking at it as just legislation that is there, but we believe that as it will be implemented, there is growth, there is human resource development and management that will go into that. And lastly, I think every legislation that we always put forward is the legislation that we believe has to democratize the society, it has to democratize the state, it has to make sure that the state is able to implement what it terms for itself, but also within the framework of the law. Colleague?
No, Chair, I think it was a good decision that we had a joint workshop. We are better armed as the select committee. We are going to be embarking on our own process after the National Assembly has done the necessary processes and hand over the amendment bill to ourselves. So the process that the National Assembly through you, Chair, is going to embark upon got nothing to do with the NCOP. And we are going to be following. We have a precise mandate, which is to make sure that public participation finds our provincial interest finding expression in our final submissions as we go along. From our part, we think that we are better armed. More questions remain unanswered. I think at the level where we are now ready to come to the NCOP Select Committee, you will be having answers at the time. We know, Chair, that in our normal course of work during our oversight in Gauteng, we also are aware that Gauteng was raising the issue that you were raising here. We know that many operators on the ground are beginning to raise issues with us, but we will follow the processes. There's now a greater need more than ever to make sure that public participation remains public participation in the true meaning. And we want to assure that on our part as the NCOP Select Committee, we are going to be able to do that. Thank you so much, Chair.
Let me request the Portfolio Committee on Transport to remain just for a few minutes. Remember, we're still having after lunch.
We're coming back. Well done for today.
Masanga, you are here to work. Let me request the portfolio committee to remain. And thank you very much. Bono.
Ik heb een paar hits. 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 Ik he Yeah.